Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me. Thanks for being part of my day. You're going to be glad you did, because our good friend Richard DeKayser is back with us, ladies and gentlemen. Richard is the Senior Vice President and Chief Economist at National City Bank. And he's been a member of our Brain Trust for a long time, and we're very proud to have his insights and expertise and wisdom as part of the service that we offer to you. Richard DeKayser, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Jim.
It's good to have you back. And I guess in the interest of full disclosure, we should say that National City, in the whole scheme of banks doing what they're doing to reorder, so to speak, that National City is becoming part of PNC Bank.
That's right. If all goes according to plan, and I expect it will, come December 31st, PNC and National City will combine, making for the fifth largest bank in America based on deposits and or branches. Take your pick. So that was sort of in a process during the months of October. September and October came to a head in October, and like I said, if all goes according to plan, we're about a month away.
Yeah, and you know, I heard the guy with Bank of America, Lewis, is that his name?
There's a guy named Mickey Levy.
The top guy at Bank of America.
Ken Lewis.
Ken, I heard Ken Lewis being interviewed back in September. And he said something that at the time really shocked me, and I really thought he was surprised that he said it, but he was so thoughtful when he said it, and I'll just tell you what it was. The interviewer, and I can't remember, somebody on CNBC, I guess, and they said to him, this was right after the first acquisition, before Merrill. Yeah, it was before Merrill. They said, what do you think the banking landscape's going to be over the next couple of 3 years? And he said, they said, how many failures do you see in terms of, or how do you see the attrition rate going? And he thought for a second. He said, the person said there are about 9,000 banks in the United States today, and I think that's about the right number. And he said, how many banks do you think there will be in 2 years? I think that was something like that. And Lewis thought for a second, and he said, about half that.
Yeah.
Now, he actually thought that we would lose half the banks, or they would be absorbed, or whatever. There would be that kind of a contraction in the number of banks. And I, at the time, this was about the third week or so of September, I thought that was an astonishing thing for him to say, to hear him say. What do you think?
Well, I think that's a little bit more aggressive than I would guess, but absolutely. Is there going to be consolidation? I wouldn't say 50% in 2 years, but probably a third. So suffice it to say, the consolidation is going to be massive by any guesstimate. Now, let me just put that in perspective for you. You mentioned there's about 9,000 banks. That's the very, very, very broadest definition, including commercial banks, thrift,
right,
as well,
right,
as credit unions. If you take that same definition, the number of banks about 10, 15 years ago was 15,000.
Right.
We have already seen a move from 15,000 to 9, and we'll go from 9 to whether it's 7, 6, 5, or 4 over the next several years. And what's really going on here is that historically the United States has had an incredibly fragmented banking system. This goes all the way back to our founding fathers. There was a great fear of banks located in the industrial economy going into the rural areas, soaking up deposits from the farm economy, shipping them off to the industrial centers,
right,
and as a result, legislation in the state and at the national level restricted banks geographically to small locations. In Texas, for example, there were laws up until the 1980s which said a bank could not have more than but a single branch. In Ohio, you were limited to a county. And so as a result, we had this incredibly fragmented banking system, very, very inefficient, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Our economies of scale in this industry. And in the 80s, we began to get rid of these laws. We took down interstate branching regulations. And then in the 90s, we diminished the restrictions between investment banking and commercial banking. So all of this is really transpiring in bringing these banks together and creating fewer and fewer, and in time, more efficient institutions.
Yeah, and I see, and then I see if there's that kind of contraction, though, I see the next wave being the proliferation of more independent banks in the future. I think that's what's going to happen. I'll get Richard to comment on that. We'll come back after these messages. We're going to talk some more about the future of the economy with Richard DeKayser. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com, askjim.biz, and my blog is jimsblog.biz. So I hope you'll check those out and use them to your advantage. We built them just for you, and you can find lots and lots of stuff there that will help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful in your small business. Smallbusinessadvocate.com. That's where you find the newsletter, too, by the way. Don't forget to subscribe to that. We'll send you that for free every Sunday afternoon. And then askjim.biz, where you get small business answers now. In our blog, we update that with 3 to 4 posts every day, every weekday, sometimes on the weekend. I do that myself, by the way, folks. That's my blog. That's Jim's blog. So I do all that myself. So if you want to hear some of the things I have to say, just check it out. Richard DeKayser is our guest. He's our good friend, chief economist with National City Bank. And we're talking about the economy. We're talking about the banking issues. Richard, With regard to the economy, I know what I said something before we went to the break that I think is frankly is going to be a good thing. One of the good results of all this, with the contraction of the number of banks to whatever it's going to be, certainly I think you and I would agree that it's probably going to be around half of what it was at its height of 15,000 that you said earlier. So
we're almost there now.
We're going to have about half of these banks that we had, 10 or 15 years ago?
Right.
All right, so if that's the case, and when this economy turns around, and when it does, I think it's going to be better for small business. I think small business owners are going to have an even higher role to play than they've ever had. I believe that's going to create a demand for more independent community banks, and that's how banks, and of course that's the wellspring of so many of these larger banks anyway, from independent community banks. What do you think about that?
Well, I agree. In fact, the startup rate for new community banks is quite strong right now, and part of the competitive system we have, part of the beauty of what keeps efficiency improving, is that the largest banks have historically been disadvantaged at competing in small communities in which they don't have an intimate knowledge. So in other words, if it's a relatively small town and the major bank presence in that town is really located very, very far away, the community bankers located right there tend to know the players in town, they tend to know the issues, they tend to sit on the planning boards, et cetera, et cetera. So historically, community banks have had an advantage in particular business lines that focused on their niche, and things like commercial real estate development would be such an example.
Right.
So, and then, of course, the big banks are always trying to eliminate this disadvantage by pushing power generally down to the community bank level in their
right.
own franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, there's a competitive pressure here, and to whatever extent that large entities fail to be perfectly responsive to the business community right there, community banks, either existing ones or new ones, step in to fill the gap.
Well, and therein lies, never mind the business relationship opportunities, but therein lies An investment opportunity, I think. I mean, people have, if you find somebody who's running, got a bank that you believe in their values, then, you know, it might be a good investment opportunity in the future. But Richard, I want to move over and talk about the economy. I made a prediction in my, every year for the last several years, I've made predictions for what I thought would happen in 2008. I made one overarching prediction that's come to pass. The Chinese, I predicted we'd live the Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. But I also, many of my other predictions from that standpoint is going to be ugly when I reconcile what actually happened. But one of the predictions I made actually has come to pass. I said there would not be a recession in 2008 that began in 2008. I said if we have a recession, we're already in it. And that was in December of 2007. And we've now found out I was right about that, but what do you think about the news that we've been in a recession for 12 months?
That doesn't surprise me at all. I did not predict the recession, just to be clear up front. But when the high priests in Cambridge economics divine when recessions begin and when they end, they look at four things: industrial production, income, sales, and leaving one off. It'll come to me while we're talking. But these are various monthly indicators they examine on a very close basis. And if you looked at what has happened with them, they did in fact peak at the end of 2007. Now, they barely declined over the first half of this year. So if you'd asked me in June, I'd say, no, we're going to avoid a recession because I viewed the decline up to that point as insignificant. That is, to meet the definition of a recession, it's got to reach a certain depth and a certain duration.
Yeah.
What satisfied then the definition, the technical definition of a recession, is what happened in the second half of this year.
Yeah.
Growth in the third quarter was down a little bit, and it's likely to be very severely down in the fourth quarter. So as that time elapsed, we started satisfying those criteria of sufficient duration and sufficient depth. So even though we were in it, we might not have stayed in it, and as time went by, as it turns out, we did.
Just to be fair, though, I didn't predict that we would actually be in a recession right now. My point was that I only said we probably were already in one, but I certainly did not. I actually predicted we would not be where we are right now, which is where things are getting, you know, a little bit worse day by day. What do you think, Richard? We're going to a break in a second, and the website's still nationalcity.com, right? Richard?
Absolutely, yes.
NationalCity.com, and you can put /economics on the end of that, and they get your reports.
That is absolutely correct.
It's NationalCity.com/economics. You can get Richard's reports. When we come back, I want to get Richard to peer into his crystal ball. He's an outstanding forecaster, and tell us what he thinks. When he thinks we're going to get out of this thing. Stay with us. Tintail. I'm Jim Blasingame.
Is such I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Richard DeKayser. He's Senior Vice President and Chief Economist, I should say, at National City Bank. And Richard, let's look into, you know, we've just come through a pretty tough year, and I have to say, Richard, you know, I wasn't around in the depression years, and I don't think we're going into a depression because I just don't even see anything close to that coming. But I do know that we're in some tough times. We're headed into some more tough times. But the things that have happened in 2008, some of the things that have happened, have clearly been unprecedented in my lifetime. And in terms of what's happened to Wall Street and the banking industry and government intervention and all that, what do you see as we look over in 2009? Do you see this being another edition of 2008, or you think you start seeing us come out of this thing a little bit?
No, I do think we're going to come out of this, and let me just explain why I think these comparisons to the 30s have been made. This is the first time in my lifetime, and the first time I would argue since the 1930s, that we've confronted a situation wherein confidence is central to economic performance.
Yep. Yep.
Interest rates are rock bottom, but investors don't want to lend, and consumers and businesses are very reluctant to borrow. So it's almost as though the traditional tools of monetary policy have become irrelevant. So those are the similarities.
So what you're saying is the facts on the ground are not what the problem is. It's the real estate between our ears is the problem.
I couldn't have put it better, Jim. That is true. That is true. Yeah. Let me give you an example. If you look at corporate bond yields, BAA corporate bonds, so it's not junk, but it's not the best AAA stuff, sort of your average middle of the road, those have never, throughout going back to the 1960s, have never been more than four percentage points over comparable maturity U.S. Treasuries, which have no risk. Never more than 4 percentage points. Earlier, about the middle of this year, they were 5 percentage points higher, and then a month ago they were 6 percentage points higher. Today they're 6.5 percentage points higher. So that's a view that our economic distress is going to exceed anything that we have seen in recent economic history. Now, Ben Bernanke was actually asked very directly, how does this compare to the 1930s? And this is a man who always chooses his words carefully, always leaves himself out. He was perfectly definitive. He said, this is nothing like that, in the sense that policy has been extraordinarily active, whether lowering of interest rates or the buying of various bonds.
Right.
So what's different this
we aren't shutting off trade with people as of right now. At least we're not raising taxes. Two of the things that precipitated the depression and I mean we're the global economies, the global governments are working in concert. That's something that was not going on in the 30s, right?
Right. So while there are superficial similarities that should not be denied and are very meaningful, what's very different is that the policy response has been extraordinary and, in my opinion, ultimately will be effective. So to your question, is 2009 going to be more of the same? I don't think so. I think it may start out that way.
Yeah.
But I think it progresses and we start to see the combined effects of all these actions take hold.
Have all the shoes dropped, Richard, do you think?
No.
I know we got the car situation, the U.S. automobile thing coming, but are there other shoes waiting to drop that we don't know about?
Well, the second part of your question is that we don't know about, which means they may be out there, but haven't identified them.
Yeah.
I think the big one on the radar screen right now, as you already mentioned, is the auto sector. I do not have an opinion as to whether there's going to be a bankruptcy filing among one of the big three, but that certainly is a risk. And that could be another blow to confidence. And in effect, I would say that one of the things that's disheartened investors is the sense that policy has been somewhat behind events. For example, when we saw the raft of bank failures in September and October, and insurance companies and Fannie and Freddie and all that, that the government was responding to these events, not getting out in front of them. So if we see a big auto company declare bankruptcy, I think that could be another blow to confidence.
Yeah. But don't you think that's probably going to be something that they'll announce in advance and not just woke up one morning and say, we've now filed for bankruptcy? Don't you think there'll be some kind of prepackaged opportunity for any of these guys?
Absolutely, and I think there's probably a lot of work going on to try and work out a solution at this point, whether through a third-party investor coming in or through some package of government assistance to try and at least mitigate any short-term disruption.
But there's no way that 2 years from now we're going to have a U.S. automobile industry that hasn't had some pain and some anguish. That's just going to happen, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the auto, even before, you know, this year began, the auto industry had begun a massive restructuring, buyouts and layoffs and closures, which
Richard,
is all slated to unfold.
Got to wrap it up. Thanks for being here. Good job today, as always.
Jim, thank you.
See you next time. Richard DeKayser, ladies and gentlemen, with National City Bank. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'll be back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.